David was a core member of the gay liberation movement from the age of 18. He was active. He's now active in queer disability and mad pride movements, and is a social policy researcher at UNSW, and was a singer of some renown in the choir in a previous time. Please welcome him.
Before I start, I want to recognise the traditional owners of the land. I'd like to recognise all the people who died or were disabled in the construction of this university. I'd also like to acknowledge the many people I'm about to talk about collectively who are no longer with us, I think. All right, so I'm going to talk about some developments in how we got to have a gay liberation choir. The 70s were a very radical period, as some of you will recall, and very movement and inward looking in the 70s. And at the end of the 70s, there were beginning to be debates about the relationship between gay liberation and what had become a gay community by that stage. There were two forums which were rather important in that. The Gay Socialist Conference in Melbourne, I think it's actually called Socialists and Homosexual Socialists or something.
Socialists and Homosexual.
Yeah, yeah. The gay word wasn't used, I don't think, until the early 80s by the left because of its American associations. These two conferences, there was also a meeting at the same time held in Sydney at the Trade Union Club, which was on the 24th of April. 81, and it was that meeting in the trade union where we might say that the birth of the gay liberation happened. Gay liberation choir happened, sorry. So the focus, here we have a picture of early gay choir members disturbing gay men at Tamarama, and you can see the look of the bums on the beach. That already there was very much a very strong petty bourgeois gay community which was interested in its own beauty and longevity. Unlike us. So the idea of a choir was initially a male choir, and that it would be able to get into the spaces, the appearing spaces, the gay male-only spaces of the gay community. And it appropriated the form of gay choruses that already exist, like San Francisco Men's Chorus, which was already in existence, but only in name because it had a radical content, unlike that choir. And I'll talk about the content a bit later. There was already a gay liberation tradition of singing left and revolutionary songs at events such as May Day marches and national homosexual conferences, and the small group of people who formed the original gay liberation choir actually sang together on the 3rd of May that year at that year's May Day march. There's some evidence of people singing. That's in the tram on the way to the 5th National Homosexual Conference dance. It was a photograph on the front of page of The Age, 1st of September 1979. We were singing Solidarity Forever in the tram. The trams were laid on by the Transport Authority. The sheep were all pink, which you can't tell from a black and white photo. Here's the first performance, the first unphotographable performance of the Gay Liberation Choir. No one thought of getting up there with a camera, so these are the only pictures that exist of that first performance. And it was Stonewall Day, and that was, we sang at Belmore Park in Sydney before the Stonewall March. So these shifting contexts and strategies, just summarise, the first 2 years of the choir, it was a male choir. It targeted male-only spaces in the emerging gay male community. The content of the choir parodied heteronormative institutions and dispositions. Heteronormativity, as coined by Judith Butler, is, I suppose we would call it, the non-critical acceptance of heterosexist assumptions, ideologies and forms in a gay context. So we parodied things like coupling, monogamy, romance and vanilla sex. We also promoted our own normativities, the things that we were working through in our own social laboratories at the time. Things like being an out homosexual, being a socialist or a revolutionary. Connecting the oppression of homosexuals with the oppression of other people. And some of our relationship normativities, like independent relationships rather than codependent relationships, and multiple partnered and multiple household relationships. I remember once being at a Mardi Gras early 90s party. It was raining. There was about 13 gay liberationists, all males, sitting in a tent. Graham Head walked in and said, in a moment that was quiet, "I think I'm the only person who hasn't had sex with every other person at this table." And he was right. So here we are entertaining ourselves. A large focus of what we did was about entertaining ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that. Our own community around the gay liberation movement and the, at the time, lesbian feminist and socialist feminist movements. There we are at Roselle Festival, November 1982. There's a performance at the Gay Centre in 1982. You can see it was summer. I still have that moo-moo, actually. And here we are singing out the front of Neville Rand's place in September 1983, keeping the pressure up on the Labor government at the time over changes to the Crimes Act. How did that happen? Sorry. Bottom.
Other side.
Oh, come and do it for me. Sorry. My glasses aren't working all of a sudden. I just bumped something, but that happens to me all the time. Thank you. Okay. It wasn't for long that the gay community became more sophisticated, and they started to think we were pretty fucked, and they used to tell us so because we, as they used to say, you know, what's fucking American policy got to do with being gay? And questions like that. So, there was quite a strong influence over the gay community in the first 2 years, which I would say waned very sharply after that. And in 1983, at that time, we changed the choir into a multi-gendered choir. That choir had some new targets. The religious right was one of them. We also targeted the left, the old and the new left, and promoted radical sexual politics in the old and new left parties. There was a lot of cross-social movement activism and support by singing in other people's events and supporting their struggles. And again, we spent a lot of time entertaining ourselves. Now, this is a pretty picture, and I will explain it. Yeah. You can tell I'm a social scientist, can't you? But I couldn't when I had this data, and I should say, I meant to say this right up front, Paul Van Rijk is responsible for recording most of this information. So if we didn't have, thanks to Paul Van Rijk, we wouldn't have it. These are all the men and women in the choir. They're ranked from the middle out in terms of the frequency of their performances.
Across, so not altos and sopranos
No. And across the life of the choir, the 6 years of the choir. So you can see a couple of things from that, there was a very strong core group in the choir throughout its whole history. And some people say that when it became multigendered, it was a new choir, and it wasn't. And you can see the kind of loss of people is fairly consistent patterns.
So people came and went, of course, but there was no great exodus.
So each of those pink lines is a person.
Yep. And each of the black, each spot in the black bar is a performance that they attended. The gutter down the middle here is the 6 weeks that we took off from performance to work up a new repertoire for the mixed choir. We used performance as a political action and to disrupt the activities of our enemies, and we used to get right in their faces. We used to dress like them to confuse the police, and in those days the police were so stupid that they all thought we were the same group and we were just fighting like all groups do. Now we have lesbian and gay police who know exactly who's gay and who isn't, and they're just as likely to arrest you anyway.
So who are the climbers there?
Well, there's Marie Marsh with the red hat and Fabian Loschiavo. There's Prue Borthwick with the glasses in front of Fabian. Andrew Wilson here on the left. There's a few people out of frame there. And there's a few people up in the back there.
But Mary Whitehouse was inside, and some people were so well dressed that they actually got in. It wasn't the only time we did it. We disrupted Jim Cameron's attempted launch as a family action movement legislative councillor when he got kicked out of the Liberal Party. And that's been well documented, that one, in fact. And the other significant one would be the Falwell tour, the Jerry Falwell tour at Top Bride in May 1982, where a large number of people from women's movement and also the gay liberation movement did manage to cause quite a deal of grief.
Well, I got him.
Yeah.
You look like a young Christian
son. Yeah, we've got pictures of him here, Ken. Here he is, Ken in the crucible. And when I say we got in each other's faces, we really got in each other's faces to the point where we knew this woman quite well by the end of it. There he is standing for the rights of the unconceived. And here's the same event with the Holy Dingo. May shock people to know that the Holy Dingo was regarded very positively in those days as having saved the baby Azaria from a lifetime of Seventh-day Adventism. And the neoliberal child protection discourses of the contemporary period would be horrified by that, I know. Anyway. The mixed choir came a new look, and I did bring my original T-shirt, but it has shrunk a little bit since then. I still take the same size, though. And here we are all together at the Darlinghurst Street Fair. This was the performance we did. It was a couple of days after an American, so I think it was an El Salvador demonstration or something. But this, we did a few anti-American numbers in this set, and there were letters to the Star about us. And in terms of cross-disability movement action, we were involved in a lot of things. There we are, Poofs for Peace, Dykes for Disarmament, and setting up demonstration at Belmore Park. The choir had a very vigorous internal collective life, which will be the subject of my next book. And it actually, the choir was a community. And it was a community in which there was a great deal of change happening, personal change, and people were deconstructing themselves, reconstituting their thinking, putting themselves back together after undoing a lifetime of homosexual oppression and internalised heterosexism. So here we go, the statistics, career statistics for the choir. Choir had 90 members, about two-thirds male, a bit less than that. We had 155 events and performances, and half of those were in the first 2.25 years. 2015 person performances, that's how many times a person performed for the choir. We had 79 songs in the repertoire. We sang 1,034 songs in performance.
We had 360 meetings. We had our first performance, as I said earlier, in June 1981 for Stonewall. The last one, there's some conjecture about what was the choir as it petered out at the end, but it was around May 87. Here are the songs most performed, the top 20, which shows Gay, thank you Lord, for Gay Liberation right up there at the top. But you can see as you look down that the songs generally reflect the choir's four-square gospel of feminism, socialism, gay liberation and ethnic pride, and its multiple audiences. Now, I'm going to talk about Thank You Lord for Gay Liberation because I've got a recording to play, and so I'll keep that for a moment. So you can see, for instance, down the list here that there are songs which were songs about international solidarity. There were songs which were very much targeted at the gay male community. There were songs which were targeted at ourselves for our own entertainment. Looking at the events and the main audience at each event, you can see about a third of those events were from ourselves, essentially, and our own movement. And just down the list there, when I say gay community there, I suppose I'm talking about what we think of as the gay community, perhaps. Now at about 10% of our performances, 11%. 3% down there for right-wing Christians. So they were... So singing a song like Thank You Lord for Gay Liberation, we have to remember that's who we really wrote those songs for. Now, they were shocked and horrified by those things, whereas people in the gay community thought they were funny. All right, some of the legacies. The spin-off group, Country and Western Act, Even the Forbidden Fruits, which only dissolved itself last year. The Mixed Left Solidarity Choir, which started with Gay Liberation Choir members and singers from various international solidarity movements, is still going. We revived the left singing tradition. There was a proliferation of community singing groups, trade union choirs and gay choirs after that. There's a picture of Solidarity Choir. There's about half a dozen Gay Liberation Choir members in there. And there's even the Forbidden Fruits from 1992. So I'm going to do this, play these two songs now. You'll just have to... someone might need to help me. I need to get to the desktop. They're all...
Is that, do you want to go back to the thing after?
Just to the... No, I don't need to go back. Ah, yeah. That's not the first song.
It's
there. All right. Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay, here we go.
Have we seen a lot?
Now, I'll just say a few things. So the first song is Whirlwinds of Danger. Now, this is a song that illustrates how we attack the left, I suppose, or try to influence the left. We took a song which was written in the last century. It was a Polish workers' song originally.
Century before last,
that's right. It's over the ageing process. And we added our own little things, which came across as a complete piss take, really. This song features a Salvation Army-style tambourine solo, which is the visual element you need to understand why everyone's hysterical in the audience. But I just hope this works. Well, let's go back to the start. Good. Here we go. Oh, I must say also that I've recovered these files and fixed them up a bit.
Oh,
just say something about Thank You, Good Lord, for Gay Liberation. It's very much like Tom Robinson's song, Sing If You're Glad to Be Gay. Tom Robinson wrote that as an ironic song because it's actually fucking awful being gay at that time in Britain. And the song's actually about police brutality, but the words were appropriated by people who thought it was actually meant to be a positive song and was sung as a positive song. Well, the same thing pretty much happened to this song. Its conception, it was written by the Reverend Philip Stevenson, as we call him, and it reflected the fashions of the time, torch country and western singers, that's in the gay community, and it uses gay community narratives like coming out, and that's kind of, there's a tongue-in-cheek there about truck driving men and so working in a gay bar and so on, which very few people actually did work in gay bars. But it was principally intended as a sacrilege. That's what it was written for. And a sacrilege against our Christian enemies. So I'm going to play it now. Here we go. Whoop, it's happening.
It's gone forward.
You're on track. It's jump track, sorry, I know what I'm doing. Here we go. You can sing along if you like.
Thank you, Lord.
Now my mom.
just contextualise that before I go. That was a performance when the earlier part of the choir's history. It was at the Gay Centre and it was live to air on 2SERFM on the Gay Waves program. So that was actually recorded off the air. So that's it. So thank you, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that.
Okay, well, there aren't too many sessions in this conference where you can